én kokainom jaz nazaj. Pa te samo ostanimo in tiste dolge hodnike, ne. Tam dol so vrata, pa treba, ne. In jaz prijem tam, pa prema vrata, pa ne vidiš. Pa tam dol zagledam Madonna in ošla.
Riz.
Je bil pa lep, mlad in to je siv. Siv, ne ta nemški občaj, ne, črn pa to ne. Prav tista prava volk. Krasen.
Radijske zgodbe o ljudeh, ki ustvarjajo duh časa. Na Radiju Študent.
Vsa kritja trde valute. Leta 1944, ko je že postalo jasno, kdo je zmagovalec druge svetovne vojne, so se zavezniki sestali na konferenci v Bretton Woodsu in dosegli zgodovinski dogovor o ureditvi povojnega finančnega sveta. Dolar je zaradi ameriške gospodarske moči in njihovih zalog zlatih rezerv postal referenčni tečaj, po katerem so se usmerjale vse valute svobodnega sveta. Kot polog za svoje dolarje so Američani nudili kritje v zlatu, zato so centralne banke ostalih držav nanje gledale kot na enakovredne zlatim palicam. Kritje v zlatu sicer ni bilo izpostavljeno svobodnemu trgu. Ameriški ali državljani drugih držav svojih dolarjev niso mogli menjati za zlato, kot je bilo običajno pred drugo svetovno vojno. Menjava je bila mogoča le na državni ravni. Na agendi Bretton Woodsa sta bila dva tehnično sorodna predloga. Za razlago smo poklicali Mojmirja Mraka, profesorja ekonomije na ekonomski fakulteti.
Ja, takrat sem dejansko na mizi dva predloga. Eno je bil ameriški predlog Whitea, ki je v bistvu zagovarjal stališče, da ne bi bila ena valuta, jasno konkretno dolar, da ima neko posebno mesto v mednarodnem denarnem sistemu, vse ostale valute pa drugačno mesto. To je konceptualno je to tako imenovani N-1 model, ki je možen pač v situacijah, ko je ena država gospodarsko dejansko dominantna v svetu. In takrat po drugi svetovni vojni je so Združene države v tej situaciji bile so praktično edina država z plačilno bilančnim presežkom in pa tudi država, ki je kontrolirala praktično 3/4 monetarnih zalog zlata. Tako da to je bila ta ameriška pozicija. Evropska pozicija, ki jo je, kot ste vi rekli, dejansko nekako posebljal ta britanski predlog, osebno je pa to zagovarjal Keynes, je šel pa po drugem konceptualnem modelu, da bi imel po celem, se pravi po svetu, eno valuto, skratka šlo bi za dejansko globalno monetarno unijo, za eno pač centralno banko, za eno valuto, kot ste rekli, imenovala je, bila bi svoj ime, bil že tam bankor, ne, je pa jasno, ta model ne daje Amerike, ni dajo Ameriki v tisti situaciji neke posebne ga položaja v tem sistemu in lahko si jasno mislite, da v tisti situaciji preprosto ta predlog za Američane ni bil sprejemljiv, ker so pač oni ocenjevali, da je njihova gospodarska moč takrat tako dominantna, da pač je primernejši ta model, o katerem sem govoril in tudi ta model je bil potem sprejet.
Oba predloga sta predvidevala valuto krito v zlatu, vendar je predlog makroekonomista Johna Maynarda Keynesa predvideval svetovno centralno banko, v kateri bi vpletene strani imele svoje predstavništvo in svoj glas. Ameriški predlog pa je po drugi strani pravico do izdaje globalnega denarja pridržal za centralno banko, ki odgovarja le ameriškim oblastem. Mrak to pojasnjuje takole.
Kot se je rekel, to je bilo takrat logično, ko se je predlagalo, ker so Američani imeli in plačilno bilančni presežek in 3/4 monetarnega zlata. Ne. Z leti oziroma z desetletji, nekje okrog leta 1960, se je ameriška bilanca prevesla v deficit, medtem ko so po drugi strani evropske države in Japonska začele beležiti plačilno bilančne suficite, kar pomeni, da je bilo vse več dolarjev izven kontrole Združenih držav Amerike. Ne. Potencialno so pa vsi ti dolari lahko potrkali na vrata ameriških oblasti in zahtevali svojo zamenjavo za zlato, ker je bil ta pritisk jasno počasi prevelik, je leta 1971 Amerika prekinila konvertibilnost dolarja za zlato in s tem je tudi jasno padel Bretton Woodski mednarodni denarni sistem. Tako da v formalnem smislu dolar od takrat naprej nima več takšne vloge, kot jo imel, poudarjam v formalnem smislu. Ne. Dejansko je pa potem si imel ti celo vrsto teh svetovnih valut, ki so bile v primerjavi z dolarjem. Po obsegu trgovanja, po celi vrsti drugih karakteristik, bistveno manjše, zato je dolar dejansko obdržal to vlogo glavne rezervne valute.
To je bil seveda čas vietnamske vojne, ki so jo Združene države financirale tudi s tiskanjem novega denarja. Inflacija dolarja je zaskrbela Nemčijo in Francijo, ki sta za dolarje vse glasneje zahtevali obljubljena izplačila v zlatu. Pretiran privilegij, kot je status ameriškega dolarja opredelil po vojni francoski predsednik Charles de Gaulle, naj bi leta 1958 botroval tudi izstopu Francije iz zveze NATO. Po nekaterih neuradnih podatkih naj bi tedanja ameriška diplomacija svojim zaveznikom grozila z odtegovanjem jedrskega dežnika, če ne bi spoštovali obveznosti iz Bretton Woodsa. Neodgovorno tiskanje ameriških dolarjev je kmalu pripeljalo tudi do uradnega konca omenjenega dogovora. Ameriški predsednik Richard Nixon je leta 1971 preklical konvertibilnost dolarja v zlato. Države izvoznice nafte OPEC so zaradi posledične inflacije dolarja začele izgubljati dobiček. Zato so leta 1973 na internih pogovorih začele razmišljati o ocenjevanju nafte v košarici 13 svetovnih valut. Takšen razplet bi resno načel hegemonijo ameriškega dolarja, zato se je zagnala ameriška diplomacija, ki je začela navezovati stike s Saudsko dinastijo. Več o tem nam pove Američan William Clark, informacijski analitik in avtor knjige Zarota petrodolarjev. Pojasnjuje, kako je na nov koncept dolarja vplival Henry Kissinger, tedaj ameriški zunanji minister, ki je k Saudijcem poslal svojega zakladnika.
Well, he had the Secretary of the Treasury named William Simon fly personally over Saudi Arabia in 1974 and met with the Saudis and said, you know, we hear that OPEC is thinking about selling oil and a basket of 12 currencies. This will not be good for us. This will not be good for you. You need to put a stop to this. And we, you know, are going to help you do this. And so he actually, the Saudi Arabian Monetary Authority, or SAMA, the person appointed to run that was actually an American. And this is during the oil embargo. So at the same time that Saudi Arabia is enjoined with an oil embargo in the United States, an American national was appointed the director of Saudi Arabian Monetary Authority. It would be sort of like an Iraqi being appointed to run the Federal Reserve right now. A completely a strange situation.
Right.
Saudi Arabia squashed the deal on OPEC. Oil was 1974, Saudi Arabia secretly agreed to this. They killed this proposal when OPEC to sell oil in multiple currencies, and then in 1975, the rest of OPEC decided to go along with Saudi Arabia, and that transactions for oil would only be in dollars. However, this proposal came up again in 1978 by Kuwait. This time it was three currencies, the Japanese yen, the U.S. dollar, and the German mark, because between 1977 and 1978, the dollar lost 40% of its value relative to the German mark. So once again, OPEC got real nervous. Their purchasing power is going downhill. So let's sell and price oil in three currencies. Once again, our good friends in Saudi Arabia squashed this deal within OPEC, and there was a quid pro quo to we protect the Saudis. And what happened is the Saudis at the time, in 1978, were really interested in increasing their voting power within the IMF, which is sort of based on a complicated formula regarding their GDP. And Saudi Arabia was at number 38th in GDP. But after this meeting, thanks to the United States, they went all the way up to number 8th in power in IMF. It was a 350% increase in voting power. So they were right behind the G7 nations. The Saudis killed the proposal by Kuwait and the other members to sell oil in three currencies. They said, we will only do dollars. We'll reinforce this. And you have to give us power in the IMF.
Zaradi velikih zalog nafte je Saudska Arabija lahko vplivala na ceno nafte na svetovnih trgih, ostale članice OPEC-a pa prisilila v zavezanost ameriškemu dolarju. Američani so se s Saudici dogovarjali bilateralno, svojim zaveznikom v Evropi in Japonski pa zagotavljali, da ti pogovori sicer potekajo, vendar njihov cilj ni oceniti nafto v dolarjih. Zgodovina seveda potrjuje uspešnost pogovorov, zato poglejmo, kako ta finančni aikido deluje v praksi, recimo na primeru Japonske. Če želi ta kupovati nafto na svetovnem trgu, mora zanjo ponuditi ameriške dolarje. Te dobi s prodajo svojih avtomobilov na ameriškem trgu in zanje kupi nafto. Stališča ameriške vlade pa je Japonska prisiljena v morebitni trgovinski primankljaj, saj v zameno ne dobi zlata, ampak le papirnate dolarje. V najboljšem primeru se lahko le trudi, da zmanjša primankljaj v blagovni menjavi. Ameriški finančni čarovniki tako dobijo nekaj za nič od uvoznic nafte, svoje dolgove pri izvoznicah pa prav tako krijejo s prazno obljubo kreditnega dolarja. Izvoznice in uvoznice lahko svobodno trgujejo med seboj, vendar morajo pri tem uporabiti ameriške dolarje, s čimer le tem hkrati dajejo legitimnost in urednost, saj jih jemljejo iz notranjega ameriškega trga, kar ameriškim oblastem omogoča, da jih natisnejo še več, ne da bi s tem tvegali notranjo inflacijo. Poslušajmo, kako to pojasni Mrak.
Amerika ima od tega precejšnje koristi. Končno, ne, če pride v Ameriki do določene stopne inflacije, to ne pomeni problem samo za Ameriko, ampak oni praktično to inflacijo izvozijo vsem nam v svetu. Ne. Tako da imeti rezervno valuto ima sigurno določene prednosti in lahko govorimo o strateških prednostih. Tako da sigurno, če bo prišlo do te erozije vloge dolarja kot svetovne valute v svetu, to Američani brez dvoma ne bodo gledali z nekim velikim navdušenjem. Ja, pač oni vodijo lahko svojo monetarno politiko in glede na to, da ta denar uporabljamo v veliki meri tudi druge v svetu, s tem dejansko vplivajo močno tudi na dogajanje izven svojega teritorija in to je pač ena od teh prednosti, ki sem jih omenjal imeti valuto, ki jo drugi sprejemajo kot valuto svojega poslovanja oziroma to pomeni, da gre za svetovno valuto. Ne?
Ameriški dolarji so tako postali kriti v nafti oziroma črnem zlatu, zato so se tudi začeli imenovati petrodolarji. Združene države so sedaj morale poskrbeti le, da nihče ne odstopa od finančnega sistema, ki so ga zasnovali za svet. Med prvimi je leta 2000 to storil Saddam Hussein, ki je v sklopu programa Nafta za hrano iraško nafto začel prodajati za evre. Anomalijo je leta 2003 odpravila ameriška okupacija.
Freddy.
Yeah. Keynes.
Hey, listen, party at the Fed.
Already? 20 minutes.
Lobby. John Maynard Keynes.
F.A. Hayek.
Yeah, we're opposed.
We oppose each other philosophically.
In the same studio.
We've been going back and forth for a century. I want to steer markets.
I want them set free.
There's a boom and bust cycle and good reason to fear it.
Play low interest rates.
No, it's the animal spirits.
John Maynard Keynes wrote the book on modern macro. The man you need when the economy's off track. Depression, recession, now your question's in session. Have a seat and I'll school you in one simple lesson. Boom, 1929, the big crash. We didn't bounce back, economy's in the trash. Persistent unemployment, the result of sticky wages. Waiting for recovery?
Seriously?
That's outrageous. I had a real plan, any fool can understand. The advice real simple, boost aggregate demand. CIG altogether gets to Y. Keep that total growing, watch the economy fly.
We've been going back and forth for a century.
I want to steer markets.
I want them set free.
There's a boom and bust cycle and good reason to fear it.
Play low interest rates.
No, it's the animal spirit. You see, it's all about spending. Hear the register cha-ching. Circular flow, the dough is everything. So if that flow is getting low, doesn't matter the reason. We need more government spending. Now it's stimulus season. So forget about saving. Get it straight out of your head. Like I said, in the long run, we're all dead. Savings is destruction. That's the paradox of thrift. Don't keep money in your pocket or that growth will never lift. Because business is driven by the animal spirits. The bull and the bear. And there's reasons to fear its effects on capital investment, income, and growth. That's why the state should fill the gap with stimulus, both the monetary and the fiscal. They're equally correct. Public works, digging ditches, war has the same effect. Even a broken window helps the glass man have some wealth, the multiplier driving higher the economy's health. And if the central bank's interest rate policy tanks, a liquidity trap, that new money stuck in the banks. Deficits could be the cure you've been looking for. Let the spending soar, now that you know the score. My general theories made quite an impression.
Revolution!
I transformed the econ profession. You know me, modesty, still I'm taking a bow. So say it loud and say it proud, we're all Keynesians now.
We've been going back and forth for a century.
I want to steer markets.
I want them set free.
There's a boom and bust cycle and good reason to fear it.
I made my case, Freddie H. Listen up, can you hear it?
I'll begin in broad strokes, just like my friend Keynes. His theory conceals the mechanics of change. That simple equation, too much aggregation. Ignores human action and motivation. Yet it continues as a justification for bailouts, payoffs by poles with machinations. You provide them with cover to sell us a free lunch. Then all that we're left with is debt and a bunch. If you're living high on that cheap credit hog, don't look for a cure from the hair of the dog. Real savings come first if you want to invest. The market coordinates time with interest. Your focus on spending is pushing on thread. In the long run, my friend, it's your theory that's dead. So sorry there, buddy, if that sounds like invective. Prepare to get schooled in my Austrian perspective.
We've been going back and forth for a century.
I want to steer markets.
I want them set free.
There's a boom and bust cycle and good reason to fear it.
Play low interest rates.
No, it's the animal spirit.
The place you should study isn't the bust. It's the boom that should make you feel leery. That's the thrust of my theory. The capital structure is key. Malinvestments wreck the economy. The boom gets started with an expansion of credit. The Fed sets rates low. Are you starting to get it? That new money is confused for real loanable funds. But it's just inflation that's driving the ones who invest in new projects like housing construction. The boom plants the seeds for its future destruction. The savings aren't real, consumption's up too. And the grasping for resources reveals there's too few. So the boom turns to bust as the interest rates rise. For the cost of production, price signals relies. The boom was a binge, that's a matter of fact. Now it's devalued capital that makes up the slack. Whether it's the late 20s or 2005, booming bad investments seems like they'd thrive. You must save to invest, don't use the printing press, or a bust will surely follow, an economy depressed. Your so-called stimulus will make things worse. Just more of the same, more incentives perverse. And that credit crunch ain't a liquidity trap, just a broke banking system. I'm done, that's a wrap.
We've been going back and forth for a century.
I want to steer markets.
I want them set free.
There's a boom and bust cycle and good reason to fear it.
Play low interest rates.
No, it's the animal spirit. The ideas of economists and political philosophers, both when they are right and when they are wrong, are more powerful than is commonly understood.
Indeed, the world is ruled by little else. Practical men who believe themselves to be quite exempt from any intellectual influence are usually the slaves of some defunct economist.
The curious task of economics is to demonstrate to men how little they really know about what they imagine they can design.
They've been going back and forth for a century.
Vrnimo se k agendi Bretton Woodsa, ker sta se na mizi znašla le dva tehnično podobna predloga povojne finančne ureditve. Idejni oče obeh je bil omenjen aristokratski ekonomist John Maynard Keynes. Ta je osebno zastopal evropski predlog, ki je bil zasnovan multilateralno s svetovno centralno banko. Nasproti mu je stal ameriški, ki je pravico do proizvodnje globalnega denarja pridržal ameriški centralni banki. K pogajalski mizi niso povabili idej tedaj zelo aktualne avstrijske šole ekonomije, ki je bila med tem izrinjena tudi iz glavne struje znanstvene ekonomije. Poslušajmo, kako našo dilemo opiše Joseph Salerno, sodobni ekonomist avstrijske šole.
Well, economists led by many economists, led by Milton Friedman, had been arguing from the early 1950s that we should completely get rid of gold, completely get rid of fixed exchange rates. Okay? Let's get rid of this phony gold standard, this pseudo gold standard. Now, Friedman was a little bit disingenuous because he basically took this to be the true gold standard in some of his writings. Okay? He argued as if this is the gold standard, it's outmoded, we don't need it in any case. Let's just get rid of it. There's a better way of doing all this. Let's let free markets determine these exchange rates, okay? Supply and demand in the world economy. This was the monetarist dream of freely floating exchange rates. Now, Friedman argued that these were much more efficient for a number of reasons, one of which was that you would no longer have any balance of payments crises. If a government was inflating, for example, the U.S., since the mid-80s, if a government was inflating at a higher rate than other countries, well, what would happen would be their exchange rate would fall, their currency would become cheaper. The high prices wouldn't cause a balance of payments deficit. They would simply be offset. That is, the high prices within the nation, high prices of goods and services, they would simply be offset by a decline in the value of the currency, so that going from 230 yen in 1985, because we've inflated much more rapidly than the Japanese, we went to 85 yen. So even though our prices were increasing much more rapidly than Japanese prices, our goods didn't necessarily become uncompetitive because our currency became cheaper. So we would never have to worry about balance of payments deficits again. Okay. So for Friedman, that was something that was great, that you know we should want. And he had something of a point there. But beyond that, he also pointed out that there would never be an importation of business cycles any longer. In the old days, if some country was, deflating, okay, its prices were falling for whatever reason, the U.S. would have a balance of payments deficit. We'd buy more of these low-priced goods, and gold would flow out of the country. When gold flowed out of the country, okay, this base would become narrower, and we'd get a deflation of our own money supply. Okay. Well, that would be avoided now. All that would happen would be that the value of our currency would change. Okay. So there seemed to be... Oh, and the third point that's important is that since there are no balance of payments deficits, then people would not... There would be no pressure on government to implement tariffs, quotas, and other means of protecting our gold stock. That is, the government would no longer need to interfere with trade... to interfere with free trade in order to maintain, to prevent our gold from flowing out of the country. So that was the dream. Okay, what was the reality? Well, first of all, let's look at how naive, or let me mention how naive this scheme is. Basically, what Friedman was saying was this. The government should even though having the monopoly of money now, there's no gold any longer, so the government could create new money at will, the government would refrain, would restrain itself from increasing the money supply. Okay? Increase it at a steady, slow rate. In which case, we would not have inflation, and we wouldn't have to worry about our exchange rates depreciating. If other people inflate it faster than us, fine. Their exchange rates will depreciate vis-a-vis our own. The value of our own would go up, but there will be no problem in the trade sphere. Okay?
Predsedujoči ameriški centralni banki Ben Bernanke je nedavno moral odgovarjati na neprijetna vprašanja, ali obstaja povezava med radodarnima paketoma kvantitativnega lajšanja in ustajami v evropskem svetu. Ljudje, ki večji del svojega dohodka namenijo hrani, inflacijo tudi najprej občutijo. Ameriška hegemonija je zato postavljena v neprijeten položaj. Svoje finančne strukture rešuje stiskanjem novega denarja, svojega poslednjega izvoznega artikla, s tem pa podpihuje ljudske vstaje proti svojim marionetnim režimom na čelu izvoznic nafte. Padec Saudske dinastije bo zagotovo premešal geopolitične karte. Na obzorju pa se med tem riše nov gospodar. Kitajska je novembra z Rusijo vzpostavila bilateralne trgovinske odnose, v katerih sta obe državi opustili ameriški dolar. Podobno potezo je konec februarja potegnila tudi v trgovini z Indijo, ki bo odslej potekala v juanih. Kitajski izvozniki v dolarju ne vidijo več trdne valute, zato za svoje izdelke raje sprejmejo domač denar. Duhu časa med finančnimi tokovi je sledil Luka T.
In ko pridem jaz nazaj, pa te samo stan, imam tiste dolge hodnike, ne. Tam dol so vrata, pa tre vrata, ne. In jaz pridem tam, pa prem vrata, pa meniš. Pa tam dol zagledam Madonna in ošlo.
Riz.
Je bil pa lep. Mlad in to je siv, ne ta nemški občaj, ne, črn pa to ne, prav tista prava volk, ne, krasen.
Radijske zgodbe o ljudih, ki ustvarjajo duh časa, na Radiju Študent.